Welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and I'm delighted to have you with me today. Today we're going to talk again about nutrition. It's a topic that we like to come back to all the time because whether we're overweight or underweight, everybody needs to eat. And what we eat and how we eat are always questions very much top of mind. So we're going to talk today with Tina, who is a nutritionist and who also has a complex medical condition of her own that she's been dealing with for a long time. And so we're going to hear what she has to say about managing your health using nutrition as one element in a healthy program. Before we bring Nutina on for you, though, we're going to have a little message from our sponsor. This program is brought to you as a public service by the VHL Family Alliance. Von Hippel-Lindau disease is a complex medical condition, and you can read more about it at our website at vhl.org. So here's a little message from the VHL Family Alliance, and we'll be right back with Tina. Stay with us now, and we'll be right back.
This is Keith Richards, aka Just Saying. Is there cancer in your family? There is in mine. But it doesn't have to be bad. We can take action to protect ourselves. I've learned how to get screened and manage my health so that I'll live a long, healthy life. How about you? Visit www.powerfulpatient.org. Again, that's www.powerfulpatient.org. Peace.
And don't forget to go to powerfulpatient.org to pick up the handout that goes with this program and to learn more about the new podcasting service that we're starting up. It's similar to the podcasting service that we have had, but a little bit different. You can subscribe to it in a different way. So please come explore that with us. And now let's talk with Tina.
Tina, you want to introduce yourself and tell us about your credentials, please?
Sure. I'm a registered dietitian. I have a master's degree in nutrition. I'm also a certified diabetes educator, and I've been working in the field of nutrition for 27 years.
Wow. So you've been keeping lots of people healthy for a long time.
I hope to think so.
Great. So as you know, with a powerful patient, works mostly with people who have complex medical conditions, which we define as needing more than one medical specialist. So in general, what kind of nutrition guidelines would you share with such a group?
Well, personally, I have VHL, and people in my family have had cancer, and my sister has diabetes, and my father has diabetes. And professionally, I work with people with diabetes, but they also have high blood pressure, high cholesterol. They could also have cancer. The general guidelines that I recommend for everybody is a healthy diet. And a healthy diet could be defined by many things. The latest research shows that we need to trend toward unprocessed foods. Whole foods is one way to define that, and what that would be to drink pure orange juice or eat an orange versus having something that was processed or dried or whatever. Maybe having fresh fruits, fresh vegetables instead of something that's been frozen in a processed dinner. Eating those types of things, cereals with whole grains, trying to stay away from salt to protect yourself from heart disease and to prevent cancer. We're finding out and more that brightly colored fruits and vegetables have the antioxidants and the flavanols and all types of different things that help protect your body from that.
Yeah, it's amazing. When I was in grammar school long years ago, they used to say that a plate should be colorful, that you should have a little green and a little orange or red or a little something like that. And when I see a plate of macaroni and cheese with mashed potatoes, I often think, where's the color in this?
Yeah, that was one of the things that we learned in dietetic school many, many years ago, and we're getting more back towards that. You look at the color. You don't want to serve something that's all white. Even though something that's all white may have vitamin C, like cauliflower and baked potatoes have quite a bit of vitamin C and fiber in them, you would want to try to get a range of different colors. And we're finding out more and more with research, and it's kind of going back to what we were taught by our mothers many, many years ago.
Right. So all those brightly colored vegetables, both the greens and the oranges and the yellows, are important to us. What about mushrooms? What do mushrooms add to the picture?
Well, mushrooms do have some minerals in them. They are a vegetable. You have to be careful that they're not poisonous, of course. They are high in fiber. I'm trying to think specifically what the nutrient that mushrooms have.
But some minerals, anyway.
Minerals. They have more minerals, yes.
Right. And the ones they sell in the grocery store are not poisonous, right?
No, they're not poisonous.
But just don't pick them in the woods.
Don't pick them in the woods unless you're with a mushroom specialist. And make sure that you clean them properly. I think all fruits and vegetables need to be cleaned at home. Some of them are washed before they're there, before they get to the grocery store. But I think it's always best when you get them home to get a vegetable scrub brush and wash them. With mushrooms, you want to brush them and rinse them and then get the water off them as quickly as possible.
Right. I have a little mushroom brush that's near my sink. It's very handy for lots of things, but especially for brushing the little bits of dirt off the mushrooms because they get down in all those little crevices.
Yes, I made leek soup the other day, and I hadn't made leek soup from scratch before, so I got on the Internet and I looked up how to clean a leek, and it was very interesting.
I'll put into the handout the pointer to the instructions on how to clean a leek. It is great to get all the dirt out from all the many layers of the leek.
So that brings up soups. So what kinds of soups do you like to do, and what do soups add into our diet that other things don't?
Well, soups are a great way to provide lots of different types of nutrition. Unfortunately, the processed soups that are out there in cans are highly processed and they have quite a bit of sodium in them. There is a larger selection of healthy choice type healthy selections that are available that are lower in sodium. But if you make a soup from scratch at home, you can make your own chicken broth or vegetable broth. And you can add whatever vegetables that you want. You can add carrots, celery, leeks, cabbage, all of them into one. And one of the nice things about soups, if you're talking about weight management, because obesity is something that we're all trying to avoid due to diabetes and some types of cancer, they're very filling. If you have a bowl of vegetable soup before you eat your meal, you tend to eat less. So not only are you getting a lot of the vitamins and the antioxidants, you're getting many servings of vegetables, and you're also slowing down your whole eating process so you don't overeat.
Right. And soups are really not all that hard to make. I mean, we have this vision of having to cook them all day, but if you start with either a tomato base to make a vegetable soup or like the frame of a chicken, the bones of a chicken, you can actually make one up in an hour or so, right?
Sure, definitely. I've made soup in less than an hour. And you may not want the vegetables to be cooked all day. They get somewhat mushy, although the nutritional content is still there if you keep it in the same pot. If you boil a vegetable and get rid of the water, you are losing some of the nutrients. But if it cooks in the same pot, you're retaining all of the nutrients. But keeping them a little bit crisper sometimes is a good idea, too. The fiber is there no matter what, but I think that the crunchiness sometimes is a nice change.
So canned vegetables tend to have a little bit more salt than is desirable, right?
Yes. Generally speaking, when I first went to school, we said the first low-sodium diet is a 4-gram or 4,000 milligram sodium diet. Now they're finding out that humans, we need between 2,000 and 3,000 milligrams of sodium a day. So I don't think you need to go below 2,000 milligrams of sodium per day. But when you start looking at labels of processed foods, one can of soup could have 1,600 milligrams of sodium in it if you ate the whole can. And the portions is usually 2 on a can of soup, but I think a lot of times people don't pay attention to that.
So that's almost a whole day's ration of salt in one can.
Yes.
Right. So if we choose fresh vegetables or frozen vegetables, we're probably going to be better off, right?
Right. And I think frozen vegetables are fine. There's only 2 in my family, and I try to buy as many fresh vegetables as I can, but sometimes they spoil. And broccoli is one of my favorite foods in the world, believe it or not. So I buy the frozen broccoli spears and the broccoli florets, and that way they don't spoil, and they're just, they are just flash frozen, meaning they hit hot water for a few minutes to stop the aging process and to get rid of whatever bugs, and then they freeze them, and they're very nutritionally intact.
Right. I cooked with kale for the first time the other day.
Oh, how was that?
And it said to take the stems off, and so I cut off the stems. But I realized after I prepared it that I probably should have, like, sliced out the V that contained the stem even in the leaf, because it was a little on the tough side.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, it's
but it's rich in vitamins, right?
Yes. It is very rich in vitamins, the dark green leafies. And they're very high in folic acid and the B vitamins and vitamin C. And like I said, they're coming up with all kinds of things that you can't even pronounce now that aren't available in a vitamin pill because we didn't even know that they existed before.
Right. We didn't even appreciate all the good stuff Mama Nature packed in these things.
That's right. We went from a farming nation to an industrial nation, and we thought it was great to have food in a box. And unfortunately, it's led to a lot of problems, multi-system problems with our health.
Because there are all these subtle little things that we're missing that we didn't realize we needed.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not just protein, fat, and carbohydrate and vitamins A through Z. It's the bioflavonoids and the antioxidants and all the things that stop disease processes from going forward to help the cells in your body stay healthy and able to keep your immune system strong. And what people don't realize is that our bodies are not a static thing. For example, your skeleton rebuilds itself once every 10 years, and your heart and your liver and your kidneys, once you have them, they're not just static. They rebuild themselves, and it's based on what you eat. If you don't get the right things in, they're not going to rebuild themselves and keep themselves strong.
So for this constant renovation process that we're under, we need not only good fuel in the form of good food, but we also need good sleep and good exercise, right?
Yes, sleep is becoming a very hot topic, and they're finding out that people who are sleep deprived often overeat, and their body doesn't rest like it should, and things don't have a chance to regenerate. And sleep is very important for that. And as far as exercise, they're finding out that even older people, if they do a little bit of resistance training, which isn't just lifting weights, it's maybe participating in some type of a class where you might do a sit-up or a push-up, or you might even just play a game where you're putting one muscle group against the other, that you can even build muscle in senior citizens. And I think that exercising muscle mass is so much more important than inactive fat cells, because inactive fat cells can secrete hormones that are poor for your immune system, and exercising muscle cells require less insulin and keeps your body more well balanced. You definitely want to replace inactive fat cells with as much muscle mass as you can get.
Right. So from what I understand, walking is good for just about everybody.
Walking is excellent. I always tell people, if you don't have a dog, get one and walk it. Because a lot of times people won't do it for themselves, but they'll do it for their animals. And walking 30 minutes a day is really all you need to do. If you're not doing anything, start with that. And we used to tell people that you had to do it all in one time period. Now they're finding out that it's little steps throughout the day that add up. You can even get a pedometer and see if you do 10,000 steps a day, which is equivalent to about 3 miles.
Right, so just running around the house doing various activities could be enough if you're in fact getting your 10,000 steps.
Exactly. Exactly.
So in addition to walking, you mentioned resistance training. So this is sometimes pulling on those rubber band type things, or even just pushing one hand against the other, that kind of resistance training?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. And all that does is, instead of being an aerobic type exercising where you're moving your whole body and getting your heart increase, your heart rate getting going up, you're actually getting individual muscle groups going, and how muscles grow as they get stressed, and then they rebuild themselves stronger. So resistance training does that.
I remember there used to be a book about isometric exercises from the Air Force, because when you're sitting in an airplane cockpit for hours and hours and hours. You can't exactly walk. So they were training people to do those kinds of things that you can do sitting in a chair.
I've seen that, and I think that that's a great idea. There was a time when I lived in a big city and I had to commute an hour each way, and there were exercises that I had learned how to do in a car by tightening up your abdomen or lifting one leg or doing something like that, and it made me feel like I was getting some kind of exercise even though I was commuting. So I think that, those things can come in handy.
Right. So no matter what your medical status or your disability status, there's some kind of exercise that you could be doing. You just need to check with your doctor and make sure that it's okay.
Check with your doctor, make sure it's okay. And if you need to, you can always get referred to a physical therapist, and they can help you design some type of activity pattern that would work within your disabilities.
Let's take a little break here, and we'll be right back to talk some more with Tina about antioxidants and other valuable contributions from food. Please stay with us, and we'll be right back.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
And VHL research is unlocking some of the secrets of cancer for everyone. So let's go back now, and we'll talk some more with Tina.
Now, you mentioned antioxidants. What are antioxidants?
Well, antioxidants are particles that are found in food that bind with free radicals in our body and carry them safely out of our body. And free radicals are byproducts of different chemical reactions that happen throughout the body. So it might be a cell getting rid of its waste, or it might be carbon dioxide being exchanged in the lungs. It's something that the body needs to get rid of, and everybody has free radicals in their body because they're byproducts of chemical reactions. And the antioxidants bind with them, and your body is able to get rid of the free radicals in a healthy manner.
So the free radicals are essentially waste products from normal processes in our body.
Yes.
And the antioxidants just facilitate the getting rid of that waste product.
Exactly.
Great. So it's just as important, basically, as urinating and eliminating.
Yes, I do believe that. And they think that free radicals can cause different types of cancer if left unchecked. They think they cause the aging process. So they're talking about antioxidants as being the fountain of youth along with exercise because it slows down cell death.
That's interesting. So if this is another kind of waste product that if it hangs around and it isn't properly gotten rid of, then it becomes toxic.
I think that's one way to put it, but yes. I don't know if a scientist doing study would put it in that way, but that's the way I would interpret it for the layman, yes.
Yeah, so it's just not friendly to our bodies. It's better to get rid of it than to keep it.
Yes.
Better out than in.
Yes, exactly.
and so how do we get these antioxidants?
Where are they? Back to the dark green leafy vegetables again. They're the flavonoids and all of the different nutrients that are found in brightly colored fruits and vegetables.
Uh-huh. So salad stuff, and as you say, the green leafy things.
Yes, and the brightly colored ones, for example, they're cranberries now, pomegranates, dark purple grapes, red peppers. All of these are hot topics in the nutrition. The sea berry from Brazil, they are now processing, and they're calling it the ultimate antioxidant. But the dark red and purple ones are the ones that are making the headlines now. And I think when they look at, they have this score that they call it, it's the ORAC score, and they try to measure the how much antioxidant is found in it. And it seems like the real purple, dark red-colored fruits and vegetables are higher per pound than some of the other ones, although spinach and the real dark green ones have that also. It's just in smaller amounts. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that you should go out and eat 3 pounds of purple grapes, just like I wouldn't tell anybody to eat 10 pounds of spinach. I don't think overloading the body with these antioxidants does you any good either, and it may actually cause you some harm. So that's something that they haven't done enough nutritional studies on yet.
Right, but 5 servings of fruits and vegetables of your choice would be a good guideline, right?
Exactly, and that's so easy to get in because a serving of vegetables is a half a cup. So if you had a bowl of soup that was a cup of soup and it was mostly vegetables, that would be 2 servings right there. And if you had an orange or an apple once or twice throughout the day, they're talking about a tennis ball size orange or apple, and most of us eat things that are larger than that. The apples I buy are larger than a tennis ball. I don't know about you, Joyce. So when I eat one, that's 2 servings. So
right.
1 apple and a bowl of soup and a half a cup of steamed broccoli at dinner is your 5 servings right there. So it's not that difficult to get in. It's not like what people think, oh, I have to have 5 huge servings. They're very small, actually, when you think about it.
And what about supplements, vitamin supplements, or the supplements that they put in our cereal? It'll say, oh, there's the equivalent of a serving of fruit in this cereal. What do you think about those kinds of supplements?
Well, for a long time, I have always told people to take a multivitamin no more than 100 to 200% of the RDI, or the recommended daily. It used to be allowance, and they've changed the terminology. As an insurance plan,
mm-hmm.
because even when people who are trying to get everything in, if you were to take it and put it into a nutrition program and look at it on a computer, they wouldn't get 100% of everything. It's very hard to be perfect, and there is no such thing as a perfection. So whether you get the multivitamin in a multivitamin pill that has 100% of the vitamins that you need, or whether you get it from a cereal that has it added, I don't think it really matters. And I think we're going to get more to the point where they are putting things in food. They have been doing it for a long time. I grew up in Michigan. They put iodine in the salt. So you get iodized salt to prevent goiter. Michigan has a huge goiter belt because there's not iodine in the soil there.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're putting calcium in orange juice because they're finding out people aren't getting enough calcium. Calcium, you need 1,200 milligrams a day on an average, 800 to 1,000. But if you were to look at the population as a whole, 1,200 milligrams. There's 300 milligrams of calcium in 1 cup of milk. So you'd have to drink 4 cups of milk in a day's time period if you didn't get it added somewhere else. So
mm-hmm.
they're starting to add these things to foods that we commonly eat to protect us as a whole. And I think that the flow of that is good. I think that it's beneficial to the whole population. If you only existed on fortified foods, though, you could probably get more than what you needed.
Right. Well, there are other sources of calcium, though, besides milk, right?
Well, you can get it in cheese. You can get it in yogurt, ice cream. Ice cream's my favorite. it is found in dark green leafy vegetables, but there is a substance called phytates in dark green leafy vegetables, and the phytate binds with the calcium, and you eliminate it in your stool, and so you don't absorb as much of the calcium from those things. So I always look, when people are advertising the dark green leafy vegetables like spinach as a great source of calcium, not a lot of it is available to your body because of the phytates.
Right. I know in French cooking, one of the things they do is put a little bit of wine or vinegar into the soup with the bones of the animal, because that vinegar will draw calcium out of the bones and into your soup. So you can get more calcium in soups by doing that.
I think that's a great idea. And I think the acidic nature also helps people. The vitamin C and those types of things help you absorb the iron also. Lots of times one nutrient is based on the other nutrient. If you have too much phosphorus, you don't absorb as much calcium. You have to have vitamin C to absorb zinc. That's and iron. And that's why I don't think it's a great idea for people to over-supplement on things, because I think you can mess up.
Right, and recently there's been in the press this new vitamin water turns out to be water plus sugar more than anything else, right? Doesn't
yes.
have a lot of nutritional value. So beware of all these processed and packaged things. After all, their goal is to sell you stuff. Their goal is not to keep you healthy, but to sell you stuff. And your goal is to stay healthy, right? So we have to think of what's right for our bodies first, and it's they're making money as secondary.
Exactly.
Well, thank you. This has been great, Tina. I really appreciate your time. Is there anything else you'd like to leave with our audience before we close?
Well, I think that diet and exercise and sleep are all very important. I think attitude is the most important. And one of the things that I fight with myself every day is having a positive attitude. And I think that I have a gratitude journal that I look at every day, and sometimes I'm just grateful for being able to wake up in the morning. Other times I'm grateful for my husband and my dogs and my job and my house and my brothers and my sisters and my father. And, you know, it's every day that we have here is a gift, and we need to constantly remind ourselves of that. You can't have a healthy body without a healthy mind.
Well, great. Thank you so much, and it's a pleasure talking with you as always.
You too, Joy. Thank you.
What a very nice conversation with Tina. She's got a lot of good guidelines in there. So the main thing is variety and focus on fruits and veggies. That seems to be the thing that's hardest for us. Lots of carbohydrates around us, but concentrate on getting those fruits and veggies in there too. And enjoy yourself. Make sure that there's something enjoyable in your life. And as she says, maybe keep a gratitude journal. Think of the things you're thankful for, because life is a mixture. Yes, there are difficult things. There are challenges. Everybody has challenges. But the main thing to really focus on is what are the good things that are happening to you, because they're there. They may just be kind of lost in the shuffle. And so see if you can pull those out and take a good look at them and realize the many things that you have that are good in your life, and make more of them. So I hope everything goes well for you this week. Next week, we're going to talk about how to communicate with a first responder. What is it that you would want emergency personnel to know if you were ill or in an accident and had to be taken to the emergency room? What's the best way to communicate that? It's from a question from a listener as to what should I put on my medic alert bracelet? Should I put that I have von Hippel-Lindau disease? Would anybody know what that means? The answer to that is probably no. So how do we go about framing our complex medical condition in terms that a first responder is going to be able to understand and use to your benefit during an emergency? So please be with us again next week. And meanwhile, I hope that you will be well and be a powerful patient. Thanks so much. See you then.